From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Joining me in the wild outback of Australia, we have my faithful companion, my trusty servant, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hi. This week I'm Euronymous. Oh, that was last one. That was last episode. Oh, who am I this week? I don't know. All right, hello. I'm in agony. I need a chiropractor. Somebody please come over to my house now.
You have like a wrestler with a neck brace after he was given a pile driver the week before.
I mean, absolute agony. Never mind. It's not your problem, well, it's mine.
Stu does amateur wrestling on the side, and that's what's going on.
So. I'll tell you what I've been doing on the side, honestly, is self-hypnosis, and it's awesome. I'd recommend it to anybody. I'm not kidding.
Self-hypnosis?
Self-hypnosis, yeah.
So is that like Office Space where you're like, I just don't want to care about anything?
No. It's by hypnotist Steve G. Jones. Not Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols. Steve G. Jones.
I was going to say, did he use sex, hypnotism to get him over his sex addiction?
No, I actually used the hypnotism to be more of a sex addict. You never get enough. I just get hypnotized listening to, like, Nevermind the Bollocks, and,
You just listen to Holidays in the Sun over and over again.
Well, he got hypnotized to where he plays Alex Harvey Band every time I listen to his radio show on the internet.
Oh,
he
loves Jonesy's Jukebox?
Yeah. He always plays the Alex Harvey Band, which is, like, this obscure... one of those really cool British bands that didn't make it.
He was on an episode of... Roseanne, years ago, Steve Jones.
Shit, I forgot all about that.
He was, yeah. He was
in I used to hear him on Loveline with Dr. Drew.
Yeah. We need to do the Great Rock and Roll Swindle one day. It's been touted years, that one.
It's good. We can also do Sid and Nancy. Talk about Alex Cox, communist. Him switching a swastika for a hammer and sickle
He was commie-washing Sid Vicious legacy. Red-washing.
Red-washing Sid Vicious.
Yeah.
I remember watching that movie and going, hey, wait a second. I've seen that TV footage of Sid Vicious, and he was not wearing a hammer and sickle.
No, why? No. He was walking through the streets of Paris with a swastika armband.
Because it's Sid Vicious, the original alt-right.
Well, it's in the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, that part. So.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
want to be an edgelord. You want to be the edgy. You want to be like the edgiest guy on the block. There you go.
Yeah,
he would have just been told like, just put this armband on, Sid, and we'll get you some free good shit. Yeah, and a needle, and a clean needle.
Here,
give it to me. I'll put that fucking thing on my arm.
Put this on, and we'll plug in your bass tonight at the show.
And we'll teach you how to play as well.
Listen, one step at a time. All right.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll plug in your bass, teach you how to play, and tell Glenn Matlock don't bother playing behind the curtain for you.
What we'll do is we'll plug in your bass. We'll just turn it down.
Because you're so...
It'll be like Injustice for All.
Oh, God.
I saw this meme. It had all these different human skulls, and it was like, all these different, is it Homo erectus? All these things. It had like a ape skull, and it said "people who want justice for all" with the bass.
Oh, don't make me laugh! I'm so fucking sore. It's not funny. Oh God! I need some serious painkillers. Yeah, no, don't do that.
I haven't introduced John yet, but that other voice you hear is John Grace in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado. Say hello, John.
Hello.
It's stolen John Grace. it's kidnapped John Grace. Yeah, he's what's that thing John's got now? Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which always gets brought up all the time.
He's still pining for the stupid fat Mexican dickhead. So,
nah, some things you just don't miss.
No, you don't.
So we don't talk about that show.
Yeah, well, that show doesn't exist. It never existed. It doesn't exist anywhere on
the reason John's old show is being mentioned is because I was talking about, shout out to Trent Reynolds, listener.
Hey, Trent.
Listener Trent Reynolds. Trent, what's up? He got in touch with me and we hung out last weekend, and that was super cool. And we were talking about the old days, you know. So, because he's been he was a listener to that show, so you know. But he was like, yeah, John won't talk about it.
Well, I always say you can just go back and listen to some of the old shows, and I think I kind of explain it and break it down.
What I told him is there is a show with you and your old co-host on the Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Lee is. Bruce Lee one. I don't know if it's – not on the iTunes feed, long gone. You have to see
it. If you go on our website, midnightmoviecowboys.com, and you go back, you can find it.
But you won't get the unedited version where I get called a fucking racist.
Yeah.
Stupid racist fucking Australian. Yeah.
He liked to call a lot of people that, you know, just apropos of nothing.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the movie we're doing this week. One I had never seen. I think, John, you suggested this. Was this John?
Yeah. I just suggested it because I was cleaning off my shelf and getting rid of a bunch of old DVDs because I bought a 75-inch television screen, you know, 4K, super ultra, HD, whatever the hell the new gimmicks are. Yeah, and I started looking at old DVDs. I'm like, well, I certainly don't need this anymore. You know, I'll have to upgrade, or the copy on Hulu or Amazon Prime looks better, so... It was just like, but I watch, this happened to be one of the titles I watched because I had an old British DVD from the 00s. And I don't know if anybody has any memory of what releases looked like back then, but the British seemed to treat DVDs like it was something that wasn't going to be around very long.
Yeah.
They put out a lot of good stuff. They didn't put out good transfers. They put out good movies, but not good transfers.
There was a company called Momentum. We're not very good.
Let me say, you know, there are some great British labels like Arrow and Eureka and stuff like that. But
BFI, really good.
BFI, great. Yeah, I've got their Blu-ray of Abel Gance's Napoleon, and it's amazing.
Okay.
But the British overall, like, their movies and television looks like crap, a lot of it, especially when you go back. You know, like a lot of their old TV and a lot of their old movies, just, you know, for some reason, like, aesthetics were not something they cared about until later on, I think.
Right.
I don't know what it was, but, you know, there's just a lot of low quality media in British film.
I think they put out the poor transfers because they're like, well, most of the cunts in Britain are sloshed anyway on bitter and shit, so they won't really notice the quality.
Well, it's kind of like a lot of the old BBC shows. They would just tape over them because they were like, no one cares. This is just content to put out there.
Supposedly, you know? it was also a union thing as well.
Could have been.
Really?
Found out that was actually like a union requirement.
Huh.
So there's all these Doctor Who fans pining for episodes that are no longer in existence going, fucking unions.
Right. Yeah, all of a sudden, yeah, all those like far left Doctor Who fans are all of a sudden union busters.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, but the movie we're doing is the 1965 British Sherlock Holmes production, A Study in Terror, directed by James Hill, starring John Neville as Sherlock Holmes and Donald Houston as Watson. And a notable cast member, we have a very young Judy Dench.
Yes. In the
movie. And Barbara Windsor as well.
Yes, yeah, Barbara Windsor.
As Annie Chapman.
Yeah, I know. Annie Chapman looked nothing like that in real life. You know, John, during the set, Sid James is like offset going, hurry up and finish your set so I can poker.
Yeah, I totally know that. Yeah, like, Sid James is riding his bicycle over there, piping mouth, and, you know, he's getting ready to shag her.
You all done, babs.
Know, between takes.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But unlike a lot of Sherlock Holmes movies, well, you know, a lot of Sherlock Holmes movies are sort of original, but this one is not a a Conan Doyle story. It's
It's Jack the Ripper. It just follows the
it's Sherlock time. Holmes investigating Jack the Ripper, and you know, in Jack the Ripper, you know, it's one of those speculative fiction. You know, who was Jack the Ripper? And like every single one, it suspects he's some blue-blooded rich British guy when in fact he was a barber.
This is the first one to do it, by the way.
Really?
Yes, I think Alan Moore pretty much was inspired by this, and pretty much every Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper novel, or you know, pastiche novel or TV movie. I just got an audio book that was written by Brian Clemens before he passed away, and that goes with the same angle with it, where you know they were protecting royalty or whatever. They all do that, and this actually started it.
Oh, that no, yeah, well, they started it, but there was actually the book in 1972 or 1973 by Stephen Knight, where he basically said it was, you know, royal aristocracy.
Right, and this movie came out in 1965, and
it was a barber.
It was very likely a barber.
You know, and by the way, you know, they're like, oh, it must have been somebody with surgical knowledge, so it must have been some aristocrat. Well, barbers performed medical procedures too, very basic ones, back in those days. So, you know, no, it didn't necessarily have to be a rich
like circumcisions.
Well, John Quasar has written a book about Jack the Ripper, said to be great, and I've got it sitting on my nightstand, ready to delve into it. You know, perfect for Halloween reading, I guess. We could probably have him on the show to talk about Jack the Ripper, because he's got all the real, the solid stuff.
Speaking of John Quasar, he pointed me to, Stu, you'll find this interesting. I picked up a book recently that he was posting about. I don't know if John agrees with it or not, but he was doing an appearance with the guy who wrote this. It was this lawyer who wrote a book called Abomination, and I picked it up, and it's a book. This lawyer wrote this big, lengthy book. It's huge, about how the West Memphis Three are guilty.
Right.
And you know, and he was, and it's pretty interesting. I was going through it, and it's probably the most interesting counter to the West Memphis Three master narrative from the Paradise Lost films and everything else.
So does it have an introduction by Henry Rollins calling the book complete shit?
Yeah, it's got an introduction by Henry, Jason Newsted.
James
Hetfield. No, I'm just joking. Yeah. No, it's kind of one of those almost self-published type things, but the chapter that I thought was really interesting. Okay, and I haven't read. That was really interesting. Was one where he said that, you know, people talk about the Satanic Panic like it's a made up thing.
Oh shit! Real quick, speaking of that, do you know Ghost got a new single out called Satanic Panic?
Yes.
You just made me think of that.
And it's like Satanic Panic, you know, I don't know. It isn't it kind of a play on that, but I don't know. Anyway, what he said was actually here's a long list of cases where, you know, of convictions where, you know, teenagers and, you know, other people were killing in the name of Satan. And they, you know, said, that's what I was doing.
From
this time. He was like, it's not like it was this thing where people were imagining devils in their closet. He said there really was this epidemic of Satan motivated killings.
Well,
and that was one that I thought was interesting because none of them were cases I've heard of, and they were all like weird and disturbing.
Was there was one of the cases that one in Italy where that boy was murdered? That teenage boy was murdered?
I don't remember because there's a lot.
Was the Sacramento Vampire one of them? Sacramento Vampire murders?
I think so. I need to go and look because it's been a few months since I read that part, but they're all kind of, you know, it's kind of cool to get a different perspective because everything out there, all the information out there is so in favor.
If you even dare to suggest they might be guilty, you get shouted down real quick. All I know is I watched those documentaries. I thought they acted like assholes. I don't know if they're guilty or not, but God, that Damien Eccles, what a prick.
Yeah, he looked like a real cockhead, that guy. Didn't like him much.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, you know, when you watch the documentary, you go, man, he's doing himself no favors, you know.
Right.
He's sitting there going, jeez.
You execute him for being a dickhead.
Just real quick, you talked about the making of, or the book about the West Memphis 3. It just reminded me, there's a book actually being written at the moment by a guy called Ron Albanese, and it's about the making of Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Oh my gosh, I have to read it.
The second it's on pre-order, I'm picking it up. There's no doubt about it.
You should do like a book club episode or something.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm surprised Paul Talbot didn't jump on that topic before this guy.
I wish. Paul's a good author.
Yeah.
I hope it's really good, because I know the guy who did the making of the Kiss solo albums and Kiss the Elder. He wrote two books on those. Julian Gill, his name is. But they were great books. I bought them on the iBook store, iTunes store. I just find the making of actual albums fascinating. And there's one about the making of Destroyer, which I've not bought. I've got to get that before it goes out of print.
There's a lot of good stories around Destroyer.
Yeah.
Zabrin and whatever else.
Yeah. And the thing is as well that these books are done by fans, Kiss fans, who won't leave out bits that Kiss themselves will.
Anything officially sanctioned by Kiss, for you can guarantee it's going to come from the monolith of Stanley Simmons,
and their lawyers. Thank you, John. Yeah,
the army of lawyers. The Kiss army is really
and
lawyers.
A fine tooth comb.
Kiss army, it's a law school army.
It is. That's what it is. They just get them right out of law school, start trolling the torrent sites for uploads.
Surprised they haven't actually got a law firm, Simmons and Simmons and Stanley. You got to put Simmons there twice, and all the lawyers are in just Kiss makeup. That's all it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, A Study in Terror. Back to the film. Mm-hmm. One thing I love about the American poster is it says, "Here comes the original Caped Crusader."
Oh yeah, because Batman
has and it has TV. Biff. I crunch.
Yeah.
And it has Sherlock. It's like it's referencing the '60s Adam West Batman show.
Well, there was a fight throughout the movie. I thought, where are all the Biffs and Bams and Sockos?
I was wanting to.
I was afraid there might have been an American edit where they did that and animated them. You know,
it should be a fan edit.
It is kind of a I kind of think of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies as being kind of action-packed, but this is kind of an action-packed Sherlock Holmes movie. Like, Sherlock's got, like, a knife in his cane, and he's fighting people in alleyways, and... Yeah.
This is the earliest one I've seen where he's portrayed as having, like, his fighting skills and, baritsu or whatever Conan Doyle described him as being skilled in.
So, yeah, like, you see, this one's a little more action-packed. It's not as action-packed, of course, as the Guy Ritchie films, but it has a lot more action than, say, the Basil Rathbone.
Yeah. Well, Holmes is like a fearless ass kicker in this one. Like, he confronts anybody.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the two guys who played Holmes and Watson were just awful in my book. I didn't like them.
I didn't dislike them. They're not my favorite Holmes and Watson.
They didn't have the presence. And also, I think a lot of that is based on the directing as well. Yeah. It's like, I think there's... I watched my old DVD from a last month, and today I took a look at the YouTube upload, which looks better than my old DVD. And
yeah, it looks
good
on YouTube, yeah.
Right, and the director who did some really good TV work, we talk about British TV not looking good, he did some of the good-looking British shows The Avengers, and he did some of my favorite episodes of The Avengers, but the way he directed the actors in this, he didn't really... there's a way you film actors to look like heroes and leading men, and he didn't really do it. And Neville, who is a really good actor. I mean, he played Baron Munchausen in the Gilliam film, and he played the mystery leader in the X-Files or whatever. They're not photographed really well, or they're not portrayed like I don't know. It's a hard thing to describe.
I thought this movie kind of at times felt like a giallo in places. Like you had the perspective of the killer going in on the woman, and she's kind of, you know.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. I think it was influenced by Blood and Black Lace. I don't know which came out first, but there seems to be some inspiration there.
Yeah, you kind of have the lighting and the.
It was a poor man's horror, poor man's Hammer, really.
Yeah, no, it felt like a Hammer Sherlock Holmes a little bit. Although, did Hammer do some Sherlock Holmes movies with...
they did Hound of the Baskervilles with Cushing. Then Terrence Fisher directed a follow-up for German producers with Christopher Lee as Sherlock Holmes. And then, and if you see the English dub version, Christopher Lee doesn't dub his own voice. And in fact, nobody's dubbed with British accents, which makes it annoying. And there was a rumor, I couldn't confirm it, but supposedly this was originally supposed to be Terrence Fisher's third Sherlock Holmes film, and he was supposed to direct it but did not. But I couldn't find an actual confirmation.
Would have been better if he had done it, for sure.
Yeah, he would have been a better director for this. I just looked up Blood and Black Lace was released the year before, so I think it did inspire the killings in this.
That makes sense, because it feels like an Italian horror film when the killer is stalking women.
Right, it's with the lighting and stuff. And I have not
and the seen, first person the first person perspective too. You
right.
Know,
I have not seen the Mill Creek Blu-ray that came out a few months ago, but I imagine it's probably a better visual representation of it than
Mill Creek is really inconsistent. Some of their releases are great and some of them are crap, you know.
Right. Well, they got this from Columbia because they got a deal worked out with Sony to release the old Columbia library. That's why they put out Mothra. But they did release this. Supposedly it looks pretty decent, but I haven't seen it yet. It's cheap on Amazon. It's like $9.
I've been watching their Quantum Leap set, and it's looks pretty good.
Have you got their Miami Vice set?
No, I have it, but I want to get it.
Yeah.
I have the old Universal set with the gator skin case.
That's a rarity. That was only out for a short period of time. Oh yeah, it wasn't.
Oh wow. My wife found it for me at one of those stores in like Iowa that sells stuff that's warehouse leftovers or something, or probably stuff that got pulled or I don't know.
Like Big Lots, John. Is it like Big Lots?
She found it is sort of like a Big Lots, but she found it for like $20. That and the Incredible Hulk complete series with the green hand and 3D lettering on the box.
Oh wow, that's nice.
So that was apparently it was a lot of Universal stuff got dumped at that chain of stores.
Yeah, shift them out quick.
Yeah, exactly.
And claim them as a sale still. And so they do
right.
It.
I mean, Mill Creek supposedly put out a nice looking Rockford Files Blu-ray set, but some people complain the sound isn't perfectly in sync. So there's always issues.
They had their problem with. They had that problem with Miami Vice as well, a couple of episodes, but they corrected it pretty quick.
Okay.
So, yeah. But they put out Married with Children on Blu-ray as well. Don't know why, really.
Wow.
I don't see the point. I like that show. Don't you? I still think it's the funniest American sitcom I've seen in 30 years, without a doubt. But yeah, on Blu-ray, nah, I don't know.
Yeah, videotape stuff on Blu-ray doesn't make much sense to me. Like, I went ahead and got the Tom Baker Doctor Who Blu-ray thing because it was on an Amazon special, and I don't know, I don't get the point.
I don't know about Doctor Who. I just don't see the fascination with that thing. I really don't.
Well, my problem with Doctor Who is I like some of the old Doctor Who stuff, but I started watching the sort of revival with Chris Eggleston.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, I like Chris Eggleston, but my problem with it was that the writing is the time travel stuff. There, it's not science fiction. It's just whatever we say it is on this episode.
Right. It became a fantasy show.
Yeah, and I was just like, well, that's stupid. You know, that means that there's no rules. There's no
right there, and that's a problem with that show. And that's why I think the revival is really. It was easy for me to stop watching it when I got bored with it.
Yeah, I kind of. There were a few episodes I liked, but I remember there were a few where I was going, wait, this contradicts an earlier episode. And then I went, it's just whatever they want. And I was like, this is stupid. You know, why would I invest in this?
You boys are watching the wrong thing. You need to be watching The In-Betweeners. That's the funniest fucking show I've seen in I don't know how long. As in British comedies.
That has a pretty big following, yeah.
Don't watch the American one, because that's a pile of shit. Don't even...
No.
It always is.
Oh. Watch The Inbetweeners, but what you've got... That's the show where you've got to watch it from Series 1, Episode 1, because it is a continuing story. So they'll reference...
I have to see where I can find it.
It's on
Netflix, or... They just put Dad's Army on Netflix, which I've never seen, but I guess it's very big.
Yeah, it was big for its time. I mean, I don't really get the thing of it. Open All Hours, you want to watch one of those older ones. So I think that's from the 80s, 81 or something like that. Even 79, I think, with Ronnie Barker and Sir David Jason as well. That's a funny-ass show.
Yeah, Netflix, they pick the oddest British stuff to stream or whatever, but I was... baffled that Dad's Army. I was like, isn't that like real Britishy British? Like, you only find it funny if you live in England? I don't know.
Probably. Yeah, I never thought Dad's funny. Dad's Army was very funny. I just thought it was fucking stupid. Just watch Carry On. Oh, God, what's that? One of those late Carry On movies is just terrible. Carry On England, I think it is. It's just
Carry On Emmanuel. Carry On Columbus.
Columbus.
There's some bad ones.
Carry On Emmanuel was okay. I mean, it was not great, but I think it was Carry On England, and it was not good at all. It was just basically like a big screen version of a Dad's Army episode. But no, honestly, The Inbetweeners, it's three seasons. Just fucking get it. Just trust me on it and buy it. Oh, no,
isn't there
like
a movie too?
There's two of them. Yeah, the first one's funny. The second one was. So
I remember when the first one came out, that's when I first heard about it, because everybody was saying, like, oh, this show's great, the movie's good.
It's funny. It is very, very funny. I picked them up for a couple of bucks each at a store here. I thought, well, I know my brother told me about them. He goes, Stu, watch them, they're funny. So I trust my brother, and I was laughing from the first one onwards. It was the shit they got away with in the episode, or in the show, I should say, very, very, very funny. So, yeah. Nez, I know Anthony would definitely have seen Inbetweeners. I guaranteed he would have. But he won't be able to tell us he's in jail at the moment again.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's back in FB jail.
Boy, he was free for a
while. Oh, he's in Facebook jail. I was like, I thought you meant literal.
No.
They were getting slow on him. You know? Well, no, I still see him recommending books to me on Goodreads. So he's still around.
Yeah, well, he's not banned there. That's why. But
right.
Yeah, I just got an email from him. Well, I got it today. He said it 2 days ago. Sorry, Nez. I only just saw it today. But anyway, I think, you know what we should do? We should name this episode a Study in Tangents. Because we're naming the movie.
Actually, a perfect name.
Yeah.
But, okay, so one thing about this film, one way I could tell it was not written by Conan Doyle, or it's not based on a Conan Doyle story, I should say.
Yeah.
Is that there's kind of some schools of thought with movies like this. There is let's do a film where you sort of make the audience feel like they're smart, and then there's let's make the audience feel like they're smart and then or that they're two steps ahead of me and then I double cross them, you know.
Right.
Which is kind of what if you're doing that one, it's kind of like comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
They call it a red herring, man. That's what it's called.
Well, but there's also like there's also like the Buster Keaton school of like I'm gonna, you know, make you think this train's going to smash this house and then it goes by, but then another train comes by and smashes the house after you think they're safe, you know, or something like that. But you know, when you watch, there's certain films that people like because they make them feel smart. And I think like Sherlock Holmes movies, the ones that are done well sort of have a way of making the audience feel like they're the detective and they sort of feel like they're, Not you're sort of figuring out with Sherlock as he's going along and you're making a lot of these observations, or when he makes them, you sort of go, oh yeah, you know, I sort of had that feeling. But this movie, you sort of feel like you're a little bit in the dark.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of going on. You go, okay, maybe it's this guy. Maybe it's this guy.
Well, they seem to sell Anthony Quayle as the killer, like, really hard. He's, like, the big red... I don't give much away saying he's not Jack the Ripper in this film.
No, it is somebody you don't quite expect, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
When you find out who it is, but it doesn't have that thing where you really feel like you're solving this case with Sherlock. Sherlock is solving it on his own. And you're sort of, you're not really in on it. And a lot of good Sherlock Holmes movies, something they do that's kind of fun is that you sort of feel like you're in on the detective process. This movie doesn't really do that. It's more like this movie is more like a horror action film. It's not really, it doesn't really have that element that you want from a Sherlock Holmes movie. It has a little bit of it. Where like Sherlock will go, oh, I deduce this from this, and Watson's sort of the avatar for the audience going, fascinating, you know.
Even
Sherlock phases Watson out of parts of it where he's going, I figured it out, but I'm not telling you. And he's not even going to give him a hint. A lot of the other stuff doesn't do that. Anyway, go ahead.
The problem is with these movies, and they do them all the time. They did it with... help me out, John. What's that one? Murder by Decree.
Which is sort of like a half remake of this.
Yeah. They make all the prostitutes in here look really, really good. And you think to yourself, these girls wouldn't be broke. Barbara Windsor would be a fucking millionaire. Really.
The only way that they distinguish them is they make them sound like British hicks, you know, where they have the, oh, the Cockney accent, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, that terrible movie version of From Hell that had Heather Graham as a prostitute who couldn't get any business.
Yeah, really.
Oh, I know.
She was like, I can't make any money. I'm not getting any. It's like, what? She's like walking around. She's the hottest thing in the world. Walking around this horrible, horrible looking England with ugly people and she can't get any business.
Really.
Sailors will sleep with her.
Jesus, it's so laughable, and I get it. You don't really want to torture the audience with like homely actresses playing the prostitutes or whatever. But
you're off getting like Lena Dunham as one of the
prizes, right? Because
no one's gonna fuck her. But like Barbara Windsor in this, she'd be making money. It's just ridiculous, you know. And don't worry about Cockney
it's
accent.
Laughable.
When you got the cock in there, you don't have to worry about the Cockney accent. You can't have to fucking hear him talk.
But that is one of the odd elements. That's definitely the Hammer influence because a lot of the theory was that Hammer did well in America and foreign territories because the women looked great and they had the cleavage and all that.
Yeah, you see, there's some of there's that one scene where Jack goes into the woman's apartment. She kind of calls him up there and she's got the cleavage hanging out. It's very Hammer.
But
it also has that Italian like giallo sleaze where you're looking through the eyes of the killer, you know, where she's ready to have sex and he's really going to stab her and you're kind of waiting for the shooting drop.
The blood and black lace influence is real prime.
Oh yeah, very much.
They were definitely watching that and then turn around and made this, but also it's a sign of the American co-production money. Cause I read that Herman Cohen, the producer, is American producer, is in the crowd scene at a bar. So the American money was very upfront in financing this or co-financing it. And so they probably said, look, we got to have girls with cleavage, like a Hammer film. You got to have the pretty girls,
yeah.
You know, you got to have your Ingrid Pitt type of actresses.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And this guy, Hemphill, or whoever, you know, here they got poor Adrian Corey, who you will remember is the victim in A Clockwork Orange and tons of other British cult movies. She's the sort of, I guess, another red herring, or I don't know, she's sort of the MacGuffin as well, in a way.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of familiar faces in this if you know your Hammer movies.
Actually,
British
the most
cult stuff.
The most unattractive woman in the whole film was Judi Dench, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. It was like, she's like a school marm type in this.
For those of you who don't know Adrienne Corey, she was in A Clockwork Orange. She's the girl who, I think she's the doctor's wife who gets raped.
The writer.
He's the writer. The writer's wife.
That's the writer's wife. Well, the writer's wife, not the doctor's wife. What am I saying? But that's her. She plays she's like one of the two characters that we're searching for the whole film. I also like how they have like your stereotypical like unfeeling German guy as one of your red herrings.
Oh, well, the Germans are very cold, you know.
Steiner. Yeah.
Was he meant to be German? With that name Steiner, I had no idea.
Steiner's a German name.
Yeah, I had no idea. I really didn't think. I thought it might have been.
Yeah, he's a German actor, the guy who plays him, Peter Karsten. Hmm. Yeah, but that's very much like, it's the German guy.
Really? They're right.
He's we don't like blooded. Those Germans.
He's unfeeling.
Yeah.
They had Robert Morley as Mycroft. Being extremely gay Mycroft, which I don't know if that started that trend.
He wasn't acting. John, he wasn't acting. Let's just say that.
Right. Yeah.
Robert Morley.
It's like now I've noticed, with the exception of like Christopher Lee and that Billy Wilder movie, Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, it's like it seems like Mycroft seems to always be these like fat homosexual guys. It's not something I pick up when I read the Doyle stories. So
why is that?
I don't know. Sometimes I think the movies actually define the archetypes of how they're going to be cast instead of just reading the books and coming up with your own idea. I mean, I'll give the Downey movies, the Guy Ritchie movies credit. At least they went back to the text and came up with their own new, fresher ideas of what these characters would be like. You know, Jude Law is not like any Watson in history, in movie history.
No, he's not. That was one thing that was kind of fresh about those movies was... The first movie, anyway.
The second one's just unwatchable.
The second one, the problem with the second one was they rehashed the themes from the first one.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's too long. It's just too long.
It's too long, and we're doing that. Watson and Holmes are bros, but Watson's, you know, he's got a woman, or he's getting married, or something. It's gonna mess up the bromance, bro.
Right.
You know, they do that in both movies. And in the second movie, I remember when I saw it in the theater, I was like, we're doing this again. We already did this. Like, let's move on from the bromance is interrupted.
Hey, Hunter,
whatever that story is where he goes up the waterfall. I thought they went to it too soon for a second.
Yeah. Time. Oh, they're trying to, you know, the stuff they want to get to.
That's what the X-Men movies do. They go to Dark Phoenix right away.
They go to Dark Phoenix right now.
Yeah, let's go to the
Donner cut of Superman 2 where it's just spinning the earth back again.
Yeah,
exactly. No, but it's kind of like when, you know, they do it too fast. They get there too early. You know, that was, I think one reason that Avengers was so huge was that it took them like 5 or 6 movies to get there, you know, even though it was, you know, let's face it, you know, Marvel is the most soulless corporate thing on the planet, but at least they took their time.
Right.
Whereas like DC was like, we need to have Justice League like 3 movies in.
We got to have Death of Superman right away.
Right away. We got to do this immediately. You got to do Dark Knight Returns and Death of Superman at once.
Right.
Like, what? Let's play the long game, people.
It's like there's no confidence they've got 3 sequels that'll happen if they do the movies right. It's like there's no confidence at all. It would be like the Bond movies going right to Goldfinger in the second film. Or, Twice or Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
I think you're thinking Honor Majesty's because that's where...
It's significant. I mean, you know, Goldfinger was like the first big deal story or whatever, getting him to America. But yeah, Honor Majesty's, it would be like doing that as a second film. Or,
right.
You know, You Only Live Twice, which is a sequel to Honor Majesty's Secret Service in the novels, but in the movies, you know, it came first and had a totally different story.
Yeah, it's like, let's take our time with this, you know.
Yeah, it's like they have no confidence they have future films. It's almost if the next one bombs, that's it. And, we're unplugged.
And it's like, you've got Batman, you've got Superman... You've got all these DC characters. Of course, people are going to go see it.
Right.
You know, the way you're going to screw it up is if you, you know, try to climax it too soon.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like the Spider-Man movies, they want to do the death of Gwen Stacy so bad.
That was a problem with the Andrew Garfield ones, you know, was that in the second movie, we have to do the death of Gwen Stacy. We're going to introduce Harry Osborn, and he's going to become the Green Goblin in the same film.
Yeah,
what? And we have Electro, like Jamie Foxx. What is this?
Shoehorning this everything into the fucking one movie. That's all it is.
Right. Yeah. You know, like the Raimi ones, you at least had like three films. Now, granted, the third film has its problems, but they at least tried to stretch it out.
Well, you can see that's where the corporation took over and told them, you got to have Venom in there.
Well, and that is what happened, because Sam did not want to do Venom. He didn't want to do any of that. He just wanted to do Sandman. And ironically, that's the best part of Spider-Man 3 is the Sandman stuff.
Yeah,
right.
It is.
He needed the money.
Oh, sorry.
Well, until Sandman's going, would you forgive me, Peter?
That
made me sick. Cringe. Like, I wanted my money back. I was so pissed off.
Yeah, that's cringe, yeah. Oh. But, yeah. Study in Terror.
Mm-hmm. I'm old!
Oh.
I was wondering, was this the first Jack the Ripper movie with the shots of the feet following the prostitute? Does he always see in every Jack the Ripper
story? That was a sequence directed by Tarantino.
It could be. I was thinking, you know, I thought it was interesting that you, because it has a lot in later Jack the Ripper movies, but you know, I wasn't sure if this was the movie that sort of set that tone or that precedent.
Right. I don't know if this defined the tropes. There may be an earlier Jack the Ripper films. I'm not sure. I know there's a few. Like, I think The Lodger is one.
Hitchcock. Yeah,
but this might be the first one that had the... It's always the shot of the prostitute walking or her feet, and then you see Jack the Ripper kind of skulking, you know.
What's funny about the Lodger is that he's a strangler.
Right.
And The Lodger is ultimately... It's that Hitchcock mistaken identity thing.
Yeah,
where there's a guy strangling women and they think the lodger's the dude doing it, but it turns out he's wrongfully accused, you know. Right.
Actually, Hammer did put out a film, I think it was a bit later, probably about Hands of the Ripper. Thank you. Yes, I've got the Laserdisc still of it, but I couldn't think of the title. Yeah, I remember that being a half decent movie, that one.
Yeah, Hands of the Ripper. I don't even know if I've seen it. I must have. God.
There is a Blu-ray of it actually floating around in the UK. I think Arrow.
I remember thinking From Hell sucked.
Oh, From Hell was awful. Horrible. Yeah,
it was a terrible movie.
And I never read the comic, but I had it sitting on my shelf for a long time.
Mm.
And when it came out that Jack the Ripper was actually a barber,
did that come out? That officially was.
Yeah, that's like they did DNA. They traced it to this.
But... honestly, they've had Jack the Ripper be a barber, you know, royal aristocracies.
DNA found that some barber, like they have a name. It was like this dude, and it was like a Polish name.
Was it the Polish guy they always thought did it in the first place?
Kosminski, that guy was it?
Yeah. It's like
That only came about from that TV special they did in 1988.
I think they did some DNA that it came out that they officially say, like, yeah, he's the guy who did it.
They've had Ostrowski guy who was, I think he was the Polish barber immigrant. Was Ostrowski, you think his name was?
God damn it, just call up John Quasar right now. Let's get the official word.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, point is that the Alan, I sold my copy of the comic From Hell. I never read it, and
you're
I sold it when I was like, okay, the movie sucked, and I know that the Alan Moore comic is probably different, but I know he's doing the British aristocracy conspiracy thing, and it's total BS.
Hey, Hannah, do Alan Moore. Hollywood's never got my movies, right?
No, Hollywood's doing film, you know. No, not going to see it. I don't care.
Give my credit to Dave Gibbons instead.
I'm going to go worship the serpent Belial in a ceremony where me and my wife write pornographic fairy comics together.
We go out and put a pentagram in the dirt and praise all the four earth signs.
No, he like writes pornographic fairy comics with his wife.
Well,
he's like the most overrated talent.
Oh, absolutely! It's just people love Watchmen, so apparently everything he writes is genius. You know.
Yeah, it's funny if you talk to other comic book professionals, they don't have a high opinion of
him. That's the same with Charles Bukowski. He reads some of his books. I like him, but Not all his books are masterpieces. I like.
I've read every single Bukowski novel, and Bukowski can only write about himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing he can write about. He cannot write, like, when he did one novel that was not based on his own life, and that was Pulp.
Right.
And Pulp is kind of just a parody of noir.
Right.
I do enjoy Post Office. Oh, that was a great book.
Oh, no. Listen, Bukowski's great when he's writing about himself, but just understand that as an author, he is so limited.
Yeah.
That's his act. It's just himself.
It's just every novel is a phase of his life. Right. Like, Post Office is about him being a working stiff.
What's the other one? Ham on Rye. That was it.
Ham on Rye is about his childhood. Yeah. Women is about him just kind of bouncing around and then getting married. And then Hollywood is about, which is probably my favorite Bukowski novel, is about the making of Barfly.
Yeah.
Pulp is his only novel that's complete fiction, and that was kind of a parody of kind of hard-boiled detective novels.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I don't mind it. But Hollywood is pretty terrific because it has a lot of true, like really crazy true stories about like Barbe Schroeder going into Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus's office with a chainsaw.
Oh, God.
Threatening to cut his hands off. Which is, that stuff really happened.
What was it about that company that drove all those guys crazy?
I don't know, but you know, like all the names are but so like thinly changed that you know exactly who he's talking about, like Jean-Luc Modard and Francis Lord Mopola and stuff.
Oh boy, he's not even trying.
He would change like one letter, like Francis Ford Mopola. I'm pretty sure. I don't think it was even Lord. I think it was Ford Mopola. You know. But I think Barbe Schroeder's name was changed to like some French name. But you know, but a lot of the celebrity names, like Godard and stuff like that, were just changed a letter. But yeah, Hollywood, terrific read. I love that book.
Any of you boys picked up the, just to deviate away from the film even further, the new 4K of Apocalypse Now yet?
Yeah, I got it. I haven't watched it yet, but I've been wanting to watch the final. I don't have a 4K player, so I'm going to watch the Blu-ray, but I want to watch the final cut.
Yeah, same here. I never watched my Apocalypse Now Redux DVD.
Well, I got to tell you.
I saw it in a theater, but I never watched the DVD.
And you know, I'm curious about the final cut because the Redux is not as good as...
No.
I enjoyed seeing it in a theater, but I didn't think the extra scenes really added to it.
You know, it's a cut that if you're a fan of the movie, it's a way to watch it differently with some new scenes, but it ruins the pace.
It adds nothing, really. It adds nothing. So,
the stuff at the French plantation,
the
Playboy Bunnies like camp scene.
I just truly prefer the theatrical cut.
Me too.
The theatrical cut is way better.
Yep.
Way better.
Same with me with The Warriors. I prefer the theatrical.
I don't think anybody likes the director's cut of The Warriors.
By the way, the theatrical cut of The Warriors is what pops up on the streaming services, not the director's cut.
Yeah, nobody likes the director's cut.
Well, it's got a HD version floating around now in places, so you know there's a Blu-ray or a 4K of the theatrical. People have been screaming for the theatrical for years to come out. There's just no one likes the director's cut of it.
It's like the director's cut of Donnie Darko. No one likes it, you know?
Yeah. That's true.
I didn't know people liked Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I don't particularly.
Sorry, Richard, if you're listening.
Fine. I like the original theatrical Donnie. I like it.
No, I never cared much for it. It was
I don't get it.
Fine, whatever.
Ready-made cult movies just don't do it for me.
It's definitely like Philip K. Dick meets David Lynch.
Yeah, that's why I don't like Rob Zombie movies. He's making them for a cult audience.
Okay, Rob Zombie's another level of ready-made cult movies. Like Donnie Dark, you can at least say, like, if you look at the director's cut, you go, okay, like the theatrical cut was kind of unintentionally weird in places that it wasn't meant to. Because if you look at Richard Kelly's other movies, you know, Southland Tales is weird, but that's another one where the theatrical cut was compromised, but it turned out better than whatever he was planning, because it made it weird in a way that he didn't mean for it to be.
Right.
Speaking of that, next week, Three from Hell comes out on home video. Do you know that?
Does that
already?
But John, does that mean we're going to do it, John?
Oh, we have. Oh,
this might shock you, but I'm not buying it, nor do I ever plan to watch it.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know that's devastating.
Yeah, you are.
What about Garrow? Does he get
sense? I don't think he. I think he skipped it.
Yeah,
everything in the theater.
Yeah, for now he skipped it. For now, that's okay. MMC listeners, it's going to happen. The new Rob Zombie, we have to do it.
Okay, here we go, John.
I'm on for it. John's doing it. I don't care whether he wants, doesn't want to or not. He's fucking doing it.
I'll just do the show without watching it. I'll say I really like the scene where he used the Skinner song.
That way I know you're lying because you put the words I really like.
I really liked it where he used the Black Oak Arkansas song out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's why I know you're lying.
When he ironically played the Bobby Sherman song while somebody was tortured. It's like, you don't even have to see them. You already know what they're going to have in them. I like when the character talks like a real redneck.
It's actually screening here in Melbourne at the moment.
Every other word that Bill Moseley said was fuck, you know?
Yeah, wow. That was quite some creative writing there. Instead of every fourth word being fuck, it was every third word. It's amazing. It's really stretching.
Yep. It's, yeah. We'll have to do that one. Let us know on the page. Did we do any Rob Zombie movie or not? Or just skip it this time around?
No, we don't.
Well, how about this? Go to the Facebook page.
That's what I just said. You fucking
Facebook,
dope.
Facebook, it's go after the group. Secret group. Try to get in, you know.
Yeah.
Go in. If you're not a degenerate, we'll let you in.
If you're a screecher, expect to be released from the group. Quick smart.
Yeah, you're going to go.
Yeah, like I had one guy I had to fuck off out of there because it was just, yeah, nah. And I had a good look. It wasn't me who approved him either. So it doesn't fall on my shoulders, my sore shoulders.
Was it me? Oh, my goodness.
I don't know, but do your research on people way before you let them in. Cause
sometimes you do, and, you know, sometimes they seem okay. The mask slips and you have to...
Yeah, they want to join the chorus and it turns out,
you have to take them behind the woodshed.
An NPC is infiltrated, so we have a problem.
Yeah, they you say something and they get mad NPC face and you have to, take it.
I do know what I have to put on this soundboard here is that miserable little Swedish girl going, "How dare you? How dare you?"
Oh, God.
That little...
You stole my childhood. Actually, that needs to be a drop right there.
Oh, that's what I just said. You defeated bastard.
You said, how dare you, but I didn't.
Oh, I was going to do the whole lot. Yeah. Do like the whole fucking 3 minutes.
Anytime we mention Marvel or Star Wars movies, we drop that. You stole my childhood.
Well, remakes. We'll just drop that.
Yeah, just, any remake.
Just when I'm bored, I'll just drop that little Greta No Funberg audio bit. Well, there's a Prozac candidate right there. What?
I think she's already on it, sadly.
Well, it's like, I think people understand, if you want your cause to not be allowed to be criticized, you put a kid out there, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's a perfect way for that. That way people go, how dare you?
But what's so stupid is it's like they don't acknowledge the reality of 4chan and shitlords, edgelord, whatever. You know, it's like the internet doesn't give a fuck. It's like doesn't care.
Internet doesn't care, but also like, it's just the internet doesn't care, first off, but also like, you're still gonna have those people who are like, are you serious? The whole idea is, but I think part of it is they want people to, go out and make fun of a kid so that, these people in the peanut gallery are horrified. But, the strategy is so obvious that, if you're intelligent, you can figure it out.
Just go, if you're of that viewpoint, just wow, go yourself right back on the Friendster or something. I don't know. I don't get these people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still the Wild West. Like, we talk about how much better the internet was years ago, but it's still the Wild West.
Oh, mate, I was talking to my son, my oldest one, about this Greta Thunberg, no Funberg, whatever her fucking name is. I said, would you ever bring a girl like that home? He goes, nah. I said, what did you hear about it? He goes, oh, on Reddit. So that kid lives on Reddit. That kid lives on Reddit. He lives for fucking anime movies, and I don't know what the hell else he's on. I've always suspect he's on 4chan. I would not be surprised.
He's just not telling you.
No, he's
probably on 16chan, and we don't even know about it yet.
Like 8chan's not hardcore enough.
There is an 8chan, but I imagine there's going to be other chans. Oh, we're not,
for sure.
We're too old to know.
Well, every time
the 8chan was supposed to be like Infinity Chan, you know, that was the... Seriously, that was the idea.
Infinity Chan.
I'm gonna start Pythagorean Theorem Chan.
Pi Chan.
I should ask him. Actually, he's right next door. I should bring him in and ask him. He's on 4chan. He won't admit to it though. Every time I bring up 4chan, he's just got this smirk. I'm like, yeah, I know you're on it. I said, hey, you know about it? He goes, oh, yeah, you hear about these things. Yeah. Well, when I called him anonymous one day, he just started laughing. I said, that should be a poll, right? This poll slash that one. So, he got it. Hey, Aiden! He's around somewhere. I'll speak to him later. But, yeah. Anyway, what movie were we talking about? Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. That's the movie we were talking about.
You're looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
Thanks, Paul.
But yeah, Study in Terror. So, you know,
bored.
How would you guys
bored.
Compare?
I was bored.
What?
I was bored by it. It was so boring.
Not enough Basil Rathbone stuff.
Not enough nudity. My book should be more nudity.
Not enough partial nudity. John, what would you give A Study in Terror out of 10?
I give it like a 6, because there's a lot of stuff I like about it, and there's things that I felt they missed the boat, or it's just outdated, and they made choices, I think, for commercial reasons to, we're going to make this more like a Hammer movie, but not quite a Hammer movie, or we don't have the slickness of Hammer, or whatever. We didn't get Terrence Fisher to direct it or something, so it's got issues.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it the same as you, a 6. I was entertained by it. I mean, I didn't dislike it, but it didn't have a lot of the elements I want from a Sherlock Holmes movie. Like a Sherlock Holmes movie, I feel like the really good ones sort of let you follow along with Sherlock's thought process, and they sort of make you feel like you're solving the case with him. And this movie didn't really do that, and that sort of lessened its impact for me.
See,
right. They wanted Sherlock Mike Hammer, basically, where he's punching people in the face and stuff. So
yeah, he's like, he's got his like hidden daggers and stuff like that. Yeah,
I in my book, there is only Basil Rathbone nod to Bruce. That is it.
That's the best stuff.
That is, know? I mean, how many times have we done theirs before and past? Is it a couple of them were done now? And they've both been.
I think we just done one.
No, me and John did the Scarlet Claw.
We've done
Claw.
Two, because me and Stu did one.
Okay, yeah, you did one without me. So,
We did the Scarlet Claw, I think, John and I together. And
right, we did that. I think for Halloween. I think we did it as a
could
Halloween
have been. Yeah, I think it could have been. And the other one we did, the three of us, was...
Spider-Woman.
That was a good one as well.
Spider-Lady. Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's like, those are, I think, the best movie treatment of Holmes.
Oh, for sure.
And they have such durability anyway, but I think
there's so many of them. There's a lot.
Right.
They're so they just got it down, the formula.
Yeah. My actual favorite version of Holmes was the Ian Richardson movies made for HBO. There's only two of them, and they were stopped because of the, what's his face that everybody loves, Jeremy Brett on the PBS, Sherlock Holmes series. But the two Ian Richardson movies are the most faithful to Doyle and to me, like the best actual, you know, visualizations of Sherlock Holmes in film, but they're not theatrical movies, so like I can't count them against.
So more so than Basil Rathbone, huh?
Yeah, I think they're terrific. They're actually really good. They were my introduction to the character, I think, outside of the Rathbone Hound of the Baskervilles.
Right,
and they're great. And unfortunately, they didn't continue, but they were really stylish and really well made. Martin Shaw is actually in the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yes, I remember movie. You saying, yeah.
Yeah, and they're fantastic, but they're kind of obscure just because of the the damn Jeremy Brett series is being made at the same time. And I never liked that show. I know it's super faithful to Doyle or whatever, but it's real dull to look at, and I just never got into the Jeremy Brett stuff.
The show Sherlock, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, is it called that, or it's just called Sherlock Holmes or something? I'm not too sure. But the two Ian Richardsons were Hound of the Baskervilles and Sign of the Four. And Sign of the Four really blew me away when I was a kid and I saw it. It was very faithful, and you know, I wasn't that familiar with the character at the time and made me want to read the stories.
Yeah.
So those two are excellent. But I love the Rathbone and Bruce movies. I can watch them anytime.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
As I've said probably repeatedly on the show every time we review one, it's like, I can even watch the bad ones. I don't care. They're just enjoyable.
See, when you said A Study in Terror, I said, yeah, I've got that one. I actually didn't. I had one of the public domain ones in my big, 8,000 movies for $4 box set.
Oh, right. Yeah. Study in Scarlet.
Study in
awesome Scarlet.
That's it. Study in Scarlet is one I had. I'm like, ah, right. Bloody hell. You sure you got the right title? Because I can't bother looking for this thing. But
yeah, I've never been able to sit through the Arthur Wattner ones, but I should, just eventually, as a devotee of the character.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, anyway, I'm going to give this a 4.
Harsh stew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Harmful stew.
Well, I think it lost 2 stars because I was in complete freaking agony watching this thing, you know, because I'm in pain.
Sometimes Stu's mood will inform.
Oh, yeah. There was, speaking of that, there was something that you and I spoke about where I didn't like it, and I went back and either watched it or listened to it. I've forgotten what it was, and I
who's you? Is that me or John?
I don't know. It was either one of yours. I think it might have been you.
Which one? Me or John?
You fucking idiot. Hunter, you. I just said you.
Okay,
I'm talking to you.
Okay,
so you.
Okay.
Jesus. JHD, you, okay?
Yeah.
Got it. Good. Now I've forgotten which one it was.
You said there was something.
Yeah, but
watched.
I've forgotten what it was. If it was something I watched or
but
something.
But did you like it? Did you like it?
I initially did not like it, no. But I did like it later on, the second time around. Yeah. And it's one of those ones where you said, oh, well, Stuart, watch it again. You'll like it. It's like, oh, shit, he was right. I did.
Interesting. I wish I knew what it was.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, though, I've been listening to a band who I absolutely couldn't stand when they first came out. I remember when they first came out.
Devin Townsend.
Anyways, I was saying.
Jet.
No, it was Obituary. I never used to like Obituary. Yeah, I never used to like Slowly We Rot. And because I was never a fan of death metal, Cookie Monster vocals, which I've become accustomed to as I've gotten older, i.e. the last couple of years.
Angel too.
Hey?
Is this a Morbid Angel as well?
No, I don't like them. I've tried again the other day. I tried Deicide again last night. I'm like, nah, don't like him.
Not a fan of Deicide. I like
Glenn
Obituary.
Obituary's different because when I listened to that album again, Slowly Be Right, I said, well, it's not as fast as I remember it being. It was more Time Changes. I'm like, I really like Time Changes a lot in song, for those of you who know.
Oh, you know who their drummer, Don Tardy, played for? Andrew WK, I Get Wet.
Oh, really? Did he? Okay.
Yeah, Andrew WK was like, I love Obituary, and he apparently called up Donald Tardy, who John Tardy's the singer, his brother.
Yeah.
Obituary. But he called him up, and he was like, sent him some of the demos, and he was like, I want you to play on my album. He called him back, and he was like, yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, this song's really interesting, Andrew. Let's party. Party all the time. Let's go and have a party. What the fuck's wrong with this guy?
But yeah, that's on I Get Wet. That's Don Tardy on drums.
Mm, okay. But so I went and listened to them and went and listened to their second album. I forgot the name of that album from...
It's Cause of Death.
That's it, yeah. And that was quite good as well. Record.
Classic death metal record.
Yeah.
It's got that like Lovecraft art on the cover, and apparently Sepultura wanted it for Beneath the Remains, but Obituary already claimed it, and same label.
Oh, fuck Sepultura, I'm over that band. Screeching idiots Max Cavalera is. Him and his brother.
Oh yeah, they're annoying, but But apparently, I remember hearing that they wanted that artwork, and they were like, "Oh, sorry, this band obituary already got it."
Yeah. That's why first world gets all the good shit, and third world countries, well, you know.
But yeah, no, I like obituary, and I like, but you know, I'm surprised you don't like the Morbid Angel stuff, at least with David Vincent. You know, if you like obituary, but
no,
you know,
they just try and play too fast. Whereas obituary, don't. Yeah, well, a couple of songs.
Have you listened to Obituary's newest album? Is really good.
I did. Yeah, I listened to it on the Apple Music.
I like it a lot. Yeah.
So yeah, good band. Really enjoy Obituary. But I did listen to who was another band that was around the same time. I always get Obituary and them mixed up their names.
Death.
No, not Death. No, I knew of them.
Nathan Death. No, I'm kidding.
No, it was I'm drawing a blank and everything today. It was Obituary, and who was the other one? Not Exhorter. Don't say Exhorter.
Exhorter, yeah, they've got a new album out. Exhorter, Stu's favorite band.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think who it might be.
Yeah, I will think of it 10 seconds after we're finished and go.
Yeah, after we're done recording, is it? It's
Open, that Autopsy. It? Autopsy. That was
Autopsy. Oh yeah. They have some good stuff. I like Autopsy.
No, I didn't like them.
I like a few of their stuff. Yeah, you know, I have a few of their albums that are all right. I don't listen to them as much as Obituary though.
No.
But, anyway, John loves death metal, as you can tell.
Yeah, it's nice. Just. Day and night. It's all I listen to on the clock radio.
Yeah. He's listening to Cynic and Death and...
sounds best on my clock radio.
Cannibal Corpse.
Just
I am death metal channel.
That's the way it's supposed to... It's mixed for that. It's totally mixed for the one speaker above the digital readout.
Yeah, with the crackle and hiss and the static.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Gotta have that crackle and hiss or it's not real.
Well, crackle and hiss, that's the name of my first death metal record.
Is it?
Yeah, Crackle and Hiss.
That'd be your barbecue album, Pork Crackle and Hiss.
The band's called Death Sing, but it's, you know, Crackle and Hiss.
Mine would be Clock Radio Death Song.
And it's called I Heart Clock Alarm Clock.
Well, yeah, you should actually be a fan of Death Clock then, John.
Death Clock, yes. Death Clock is awesome.
Metalocalypse, that shows up pisser, that is.
Yeah, it's great.
My 7-year-old was watching it with me last month.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, it is music for kids.
Yeah. I said, do you like this? He goes, no. Yeah. Were you murder face? He goes, no, I don't like this, man. But that...
scamming kid.
Yeah. That Roxo. It's completely a ripoff of David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Dr. Roxo. All right.
Dr. Roxo, the rock and roll clown. He loves cocaine.
Did they ever do a film of Metalocalypse or not?
They did. They did a, they did a musical, like a rock opera called the Doomstar Apocalypse or the Doomstar Requiem.
Right.
But it wasn't like in theaters or anything, but it was, you know, in all music, you know, kind of that was the big conclusion to the show, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Let's go ahead and sign out. This is the latest in our Sherlock Holmes series. We'll probably do another Sherlock Holmes.
Actually, it's like it's not really an episode about Sherlock Holmes. It's just...
It's us rambling, but, you know, we've done a few Sherlock movies, so, you know, I'm sure we'll do another one in the future. We'll do The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes and something.
Oh, God, no, I don't want to sit there.
Yeah,
no.
You know what?
I could do a show on it without even watching it again. So
yeah,
we could.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could just not watch it and just pretend you did.
Because I've seen it a few times, but I don't care for it.
I've never seen it. I just, you know. I just want to talk about why Billy Wilder bugs me the older I get, you know.
Yeah, actually, since it's come up in the group, maybe we should talk about Billy Wilder and
yeah.
Just because something comes up in the group doesn't mean you got to talk about it. Are you serious?
Yeah,
fact, Stu's an advocate. If it comes up in the group, we don't talk about it.
There's that too. So we're sort of the anti-podcast. The anti-podcast.
See, that's the best method for not having to talk about something you don't want to. If you bring it up in the group, I'm not going to talk about it. If you don't bring it up in the group, I'm not going to remember it. I don't really care, so I'm not going to bring it up either.
Come on, we do stuff to create new conversation in the group.
Yeah. But we are going to do Can't Stop the Music soon.
Oh, yeah.
Whether I do it on my own, I don't care. I'll do it on my own if I have to.
Long threatened show right there.
Long promised, not threatened. Threat means something you're threatening.
Does that mean we get to do Wasp when we do Rock Month?
If you want to do Wasp, you can.
Fucking hell. Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
I'll be doing a marathon of Walker Texas Ranger episodes that week. So.
Yeah.
Good to binge.
I love Wasp so much.
Get my fill of fight scenes in.
Listen, I think that first Wasp album is good. The Last Command is not good. When I went and re-listened to it a few months back, the opener Wild Child, I will say, is the best opener of a Wasp album in my book. I love that song.
I've been listening to The Last Command at the gym lately. It's pretty. I like it.
Yeah.
All I know is I saw that goof walking around trying to be incognito at the Chillicon. He just looked like a homeless guy in a denim shirt.
Blackie. Well, I mean, you know, Blackie's old. You know.
Yeah. He looked. Oh, this is 1996, I think. 95, and he looked old.
He was old then. Yeah.
Should have woke up and said
he was in the New York Dolls. For God's
sake. You gotta say, like, but Blackie, he's kind of like Doug Pinnick from King's X. Like, he was old when he broke.
Yeah,
you know?
He lied about his age. I'm sure.
He's in the New
York
Dolls.
Been around for a while.
Daniel Craig, he's probably 10 years older than he claims.
Oh, he probably is. Yeah.
Back in like the 90s, when like Dog Man came out, Doug Pinnick was like 40. You know.
Yeah. Steve Bader's of the Dead Boys, same thing. Supposedly he was older than he claimed.
No. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Are we meant to be gone on a tangent even further, or what are we doing?
We can sign off. We can.
Yeah. Midnight movie tangents.
People probably say no.
Keep the tangents going. I got another half hour. I don't care.
No, it's almost my bedtime, so let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Oh, poor man has to be in bed before the streetlights come on.
You gotta get up and work.
Dude, just do what we all do. Just, like, you know, slam some espresso in the morning and, you know, do some push-ups and
do that
ready to fight off the lack of sleep.
Push-ups? I can't even move my neck at the moment. Like,
I'm sorry, Stu, I forgot about your condition.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be like Niedermeyer in Animal House with that big neck brace on. Oh. Boy, I need some chiropractor or some Thai massage, something like that.
Probably plenty of that in Melbourne, I'm sure.
Oh, there is. Speaking of that, there was a Thai restaurant. I went out with my mate Rob last night, and there was a restaurant spelt P-H-A-T and chicks afterwards. It was called Fat Chicks, a Thai restaurant. I'm like, oh, good name. Don't know if they really, know what they're doing.
Maybe they do. They know it gets attention.
Fat Chicks. Yeah. Oh, whatever. I don't care.
All right.
Fucking shithole of an area it was anyway.
Well, everybody, I think that's about it.
I think that's about it. And I think it's about the start of the one-star reviews to keep coming in on iTunes. We got a one-star review recently. Thanks, champ.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a one-star. Good on you. It's very
cool.
Nice. Keep those one-stars coming in. Bring those five-star averages down, for fuck's sake. Bring them down.
Oh,
don't want to walk around with our
don't
heads.
Don't do that.
No. Give us some threes. Be creative, you know? If you give us a one-star, be creative. Don't sit there saying, oh, don't ever bring Richard Coon back on. Just say something creative. At least say, well, these guys are a bunch of idiots. You know? That's what it said. Sorry, Rich, but that's what it did say. He knows anyway. He told me about it. So, yeah, pretty fucking mean spirited.
I don't really pay attention to our reviews.
I haven't checked them for years until Rich told me about it. And I go, that's pretty harsh. I'll have a look at it. And, yeah, pretty dumb. Whatever. Oh, well. Come on, sign off. I want to sleep and get something to eat as well.
All right. Water. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
All right. Later. Don't
say he's gonna watch it, fuckface!
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.